This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Supporters of Bernie Sanders have long resisted early pronouncements of the death of his campaign. But after the last round of primary races, when Sanders picked up only one win out of five, the conversation around what he might do and should do next has begun in earnest. After all, with his inspiring talk of building a political revolution, the Sanders campaign has already infused new energy into the broad progressive movement, the likes of which the U.S. has not seen in years. My guest is Sarah Van Gelder. She's the co-founder and editor-in-chief of Yes Magazine, and she recently wrote an article entitled "The Pragmatic Impacts of Sanders' Big Dreams." Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
So let's talk about what he has already achieved. You know, I know we want to sort of set aside questions of what he might do. The media, mainstream media, are all over that. But just in this past year, from the time he launched his campaign, starting out with not as much name recognition as Clinton, speaking to these big crowds and winning supporters from around the country, getting contributions from 2 million people, How do you see what he has built just in the act of running for the nomination?
Well, one of the big things is that he has proven that an insurgent candidate who doesn't have the backing of the corporate media and doesn't have the backing of Wall Street can have a huge impact. I mean, if you look at the difference between the kind of media coverage that Donald Trump has received and the kind of media coverage that Bernie received, the fact that he is still doing so well is really quite remarkable. And the fact that he's been able to raise money to match and in some cases exceed the kinds of fundraising that Hillary Clinton has done from ordinary people, from contributions averaging $27, is really extraordinary. So that's one thing. I think a second thing is that he's shown how much people are looking for a person with the kind of integrity that he brings, where he believes in some stuff and he doesn't pander to voters. He sticks with what he believes. And then you can choose if that's a belief system you adhere to. If you think that the wealthy have too much wealth and power and want to see it distributed, you can choose that person knowing that that's what he's going to bring into office. I really appreciated that, especially right after the terrorist attacks, I believe it was in Paris, when he was asked, what is the biggest security threat facing the country? And he had earlier said the biggest security threat is climate change. And he didn't change his view on that in light of that recent happening. I think he stuck with what he knew, even if it wasn't the most popular thing. So he brought the climate crisis right front and center. And then the third thing I think is so remarkable is that he was willing to be schooled by Black Lives Matter. You know, he didn't start off his campaign with as much of a racial justice focus, although I do think that's always been part of his value system. But he was willing to listen to the activists from Black Lives Matter, and I do think that changed the kind of emphasis that he put on that central question of racial justice.
Right. One might only imagine how his campaign would have turned out had he received fair media coverage. So we know that the media impacts elections in a huge way, and we've seen it in the Sanders campaign. The other thing, Sarah, it feels like to me that the Sanders campaign has achieved is it's given lie to this assertion that we've heard over and over again that the American people are centrist people, that the Democrats need to move right in order to get more votes. We've been told this over and over again that it's dangerous to have leftist pronouncements. It's dangerous to give voice to progressive issues because that's marginal. That's just a small faction of our society. And until now, we hadn't seen a candidate that has finally been able to speak to these issues and show us that it's a much bigger section of our society than people thought.
I think that's right. And I think the Occupy movement actually did a lot to set the stage for that by bringing the questions of inequality front and center, as well as people like Elizabeth Warren. But I think one of the lessons from this is actually that the corporate Democratic Party is really in trouble, that there is no longer a belief that the Wall Street and large corporations and big trade deals are going to benefit ordinary people. There's been this huge divide, I think, opened up between the interests of most of us, middle class, working class, poor people, as opposed to the interests of the elite. And the Democratic Party, at least the Hillary Clinton wing of the Democratic Party, has really gotten way too cozy with the corporate side of that and lost track, I think, of where most Americans are. And I think the Donald Trump campaign has kind of picked up on that energy, that sense of disillusionment and alienation. Sadly, he's bringing in, you know, the old right-wing populist notions of racism and, you know, religious intolerance into that mix. So that's a really unfortunate part of it. Bernie Sanders, on the other hand, I think is tapping into that populist aspiration, but in a way that's inclusive, in a way that's authentically inclusive, and that has that vision of understanding the intersections of race and of economic populism and of tolerance and inclusion.
And the Hillary Clinton camp has been essentially demanding overtly or slyly for a while now that Sanders ought to turn over his supporters to her, as if it was, you know, as if supporters were these things he had collected that he can then hand over to her. There's been a big section of, or at least vocal, I should say, section of his supporters who've adopted the Bernie or bust approach, saying it's I'm either voting for Bernie Sanders or no one at all, which has then led to the Clinton camp and establishment Democrats saying, well, then you're basically going to end up letting Trump be president. And that fight has gone on and on and on. However, The Sanders campaign, it sort of made it clear early on that he was in this to win, that this was not a symbolic candidacy. And indeed, he has come far closer to winning the nomination than any progressive Democrat has managed to do. So if you look back at Kucinich, etc. So do you think that at this point, the only two choices are that he gives up and that people vote for Hillary Clinton, or that we see the Trump specter, you know, raise its head?
Well, I have to say, I am terrified at the Trump specter. I mean, I think there's a level of hostility, violence, narcissism wrapped up in his candidacy that I think would be really quite terrifying. So I don't know what to say exactly about that, except that I also understand the inclination to support someone like Jill Stein, whose values are so much aligned with the values of Bernie Sanders. And I think we also have to look beyond the presidential campaign, because I think one of the things that I was disappointed by after the Obama campaign was there was such an extraordinary grassroots network that was built up around that campaign. But after he was elected, it was subsumed under the Democratic Party. And all the work that people had done on the grassroots to build the connections locally and to build that infrastructure and to get really clear on what their agenda was, it was all turned around to be in service of the Obama agenda for healthcare. And even that healthcare debate was impoverished by not allowing single payer, which so many Americans supported, not allowing a single payer proposal to be part of the conversation. So I think this time it's really important that the Bernie Sanders campaign mechanism remain independent of the Democratic Party and be able to be locally rooted and be able to do things like get local candidates elected and be a source of influence, of political power, that doesn't become just a tool of the Democratic Party, and especially the Democratic Party in the form it is now, with so much influence by Wall Street and big corporations.
So I want to turn to what you wrote about. Your article is entitled "The Pragmatic Impact of Sanders's Big Dreams." And of course, in this battle between Sanders and Hillary Clinton, the media, mainstream media, corporate media, has painted this fantasy that Clinton is, and she's helped, of course, her Clinton campaign herself has pushed this, that Hillary Clinton is the pragmatist versus Bernie Sanders, the idealist. And of course, Bernie Sanders has been in government as a senator, before that a mayor, for a very long time. So we can actually examine whether his candidacy would be that of a pragmatist versus idealist. What do you know? What can you tell our audience about the kind of senator and before that the kind of mayor Bernie Sanders was, in terms of how pragmatic a president he would make?
Yeah, so let me address the mayoral part, because that was the part I researched for that article.
And it's lesser known, I think.
I was curious about that, too. Yeah, I mean, it was a while ago. So on the one hand, maybe you could say it's not so relevant. On the other hand, he was the chief executive of a government. He scraped into office with only 10 votes because he was known for this political rhetoric about, the wealthy versus the poor. And, a lot of people sort of wrote him off, but he did make it into office by just 10 votes and immediately became very pragmatic, not in the sense of compromising his values, but in the sense of saying, how will we actually get things done? So one of the things that he did that I think was so exciting was that Burlington was at the point where rents were starting to go up. And like many cities that are sort of in recovery, that threatened a lot of people, a lot of poor working class, middle class people with being displaced because they would no longer be able to afford to live in what was becoming a more desirable city. So Bernie Sanders first off thought he would want to enact rent control and some other policies, but with the influence of some of the local activists, he became a supporter of a community land trust, which went about acquiring homes and apartments, holding them as a nonprofit, but selling the actual homes to homeowners and keeping them affordable, making them permanently affordable. And that's one of the differences between a lot of housing policies where you provide a subsidy, but you have to keep on subsidizing it. This put the homes permanently out of the speculative market into the affordability market. And now there's 2,800 units in Burlington that are all part of this land trust and are all permanently affordable. So that was one of the pragmatic things that I really appreciate that he did. Another was to work a lot with local businesses. A lot of a lot of local and state government officials, when they're looking to bring the economy up, will do what they can to attract big corporations to come in and provide jobs. But the problem is if you offer them all sorts of tax incentives and subsidies to come in, the next time somebody comes along with a bigger tax incentive or subsidy, or if they can just go overseas and pay next to nothing in wages, you're going to lose them again. So you end up with this really awful sort of boom bust thing that we've had so much trouble with in this country. So Bernie's approach was very different. He said, let's go with the local businesses who are rooted here and let's do everything we can to encourage them and to help them thrive. So one of the businesses they helped get going or helped to thrive was Seventh Generation, which now I believe in the article I said it was a $300 million company now and hiring dozens of people and been a very stable and very ethical source of employment. And another is a whole, I sort of played out in the article, a whole series of events that all took place around land that had been written off, had been used as a dump, basically. And it had adjacent to it a wood-burning generation facility. And a businessman decided to locate there to use the waste heat from the generating facility to warm his greenhouses. And over time, between the city's involvement, between these local businesses, they created this wonderful restoration of this land into being farmland and being a farm incubator. New farms got going. And now there's like almost a dozen different farms that are all supplying local food and bringing this really healthy, wonderful food, even to places as far north as Vermont.
So when we're talking about pragmatic politicians, he clearly demonstrated he could be one, but in favor of progressive values. Whereas when politicians like Hillary Clinton say pragmatic, what they mean is that she simply has to do what the right would do because that is the only alternative. And Sanders, his candidacy, his tenure as mayor of Burlington, and even really as a senator, has shown otherwise. So finally, I understand that the National Nurses United is organizing this People's Summit a few days after the last primary. There's a lot of talk about where this movement that Sanders has helped to launch, if you will, or just simply given voice to an existing movement and turned it into something maybe more organized, where it's all heading. Any thoughts on that, Sarah? Where do you think the people who have been excited about the Bernie Sanders candidacy could go if either if Sanders doesn't become the nominee, which it's sadly looking like he won't, but even if he does, because of course movements shouldn't simply go away when elections are over.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the really important lessons because we get so excited about a presidential candidate, as many of us were when President Obama was first running for office. that does generate a lot of interest and excitement, and people get involved in the political process who might not be otherwise. And there's a sense of hope and, wow, real transformation can happen. And you don't want to lose that energy and just everyone go away and hope, you know, if you get the person elected into office, sometimes people just go home and figure, well, they've got it handled now. Well, they don't have it handled because, you know, there's in Washington, D.C., we all know that there's so many lobbyists and so much money pushing them to adopt the corporate agenda. The only way they're going to continue or adopt a more people's-oriented agenda is if they get a lot of pressure from ordinary people like us who just keep it up. So I think it's really important to consider how we maintain independent political organizations of that kind, not allowing them to become part of the Democratic Party. That doesn't mean we don't participate in the Democratic Party. Maybe sometimes we do, and maybe sometimes in the Republican Party, maybe sometime in the Green Party, but maintaining the independence. So instead of us coming to candidates who we hope will lead us in the right direction, we, the people, set the agenda, and then we find the candidates who are most likely and most willing to authentically carry out that agenda. It's really important that we not forget the local races. Those are so important also for so many reasons.
And in fact, there are some congressional races nationwide where some very progressive candidates are running and look like they might win, at least win the nomination, if not the election itself. And we'll be profiling those in the coming days and weeks. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today. Give out the website for Yes Magazine.
It's yesmagazine.org.
And we'll post that to our website later today. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sarah Van Gelder is the co-founder and editor-in-chief of Yes Magazine, and she recently wrote an article entitled The Pragmatic Impacts of Sanders' Big Dreams. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. And by the way, if you want to watch a new behind-the-scenes documentary about how our show is created, click on About on our website. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter and get our interviews on iTunes and Vimeo.